now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, what a postseason and World Series we just witnessed.
Oh my goodness. An all-time classic of a World Series. And an all-time hate watch if you are a Blue Jays hater like me. I'll say a thing, but I'll let you tell me your thoughts. I'll let you probably give a more rational and composed take on this World Series than me. How did you find the World Series as a neutral?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say neutral, because I am, little known fact about me, I am like an eighth Canadian or something. And so like I had a small like part of me that was sort of like intrigued by the fact that Blue Jays were doing so well. My kind of take on the World Series was that as I was watching the Blue Jays, my thought was the entire series, and I said this to everybody I talked to this about, like as it was going on, this was their shot. And that's why it's so like, even as someone who was hate watching, because I don't like the Blue Jays, even though I am an eighth Canadian, it was hard to watch for the fans of the Blue Jays, because I don't know that they're going to get another chance. That's really tough to watch, because I know as how we felt losing 2020. And, you know, at the time we thought that was only the beginning and we had a long run, you know, whereas the Blue Jays, like Bichette's a free agent, a bunch of their pitchers are free agents after this season. They got Vladdy locked up, but like, that's kind of it. And then how long, you know, how much longer is Springer playing at this level for? Who knows? It's going to be very interesting to see how their off season goes. But I felt bad for Blue Jays fans, but overall fine with the outcome. And it was a all-time amazing performance from Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think it's on the same level as Mad Bum 2016.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. I think, Yamamoto was insanely good. I mean, Ohtani did what he needed to do as well, cheat code of a player. And I mean, I love the fact that it ended up being not like he didn't do that well in game seven, but just Ohtani v. Scherzer in game seven is just like, oh, it's what the script writers cooked up. But yeah, I think you make a really good point that like, the Dodgers are making it look easy right now, but it's so hard to get to the World Series, no matter how good you are. And it's so easy for a good team, a genuinely good team, to get bounced in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like you said, in 2020, the Rays in 2021 were arguably an even better team than they were in 2020. And they got bounced in the first round. And heck, right? The Dodgers have been maybe not this good, but easily the best team in the National League for about a decade now.
Yes.
And the amount of times they got knocked out early with arguably better teams than the one they have now, or more dominant teams than the one they have now.
Yeah.
It's never simple. And I don't want to sound like a hater, but I don't think the Blue Jays were actually that good. I think they took advantage of what was a very weak American League this year.
I agree with that.
And they benefited from a lot of overperformance. I don't think they were a better team than the Mariners. I don't think they were even a better team than the Tigers. So it's... But that's how playoff baseball works. You don't need to be better than them. You've just got to be good for those games, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to ride your luck a little bit in the postseason. And unfortunately for the Blue Jays, it ran out at the worst possible time, like just short. It's a bottle job for, like, it's up there with the 2011 Rangers in terms of bottle jobs. Yeah. Like being that close to winning it, like You go up 3-2, both games at home. You just need to win one home game out of two. You have so many opportunities to win both of those games. Can't get it done.
And they had Gausman and Scherzer starting those last two games, which you like. I don't know if you're a Blue Jays fan, like who you else you would have rather. I mean, maybe Scherzer's old, but like I don't know who else you'd want to have. And Scherzer was not the problem last night for the Blue Jays either. Scherzer was fine. Scherzer was fine. And I feel like the Blue Jays were very good at putting the ball in play and being opportunistic, which is a great style of baseball to play, to be honest, in the playoffs in a small sample size. Like that is a good, and that's why the Guardians have found ways to win games in the postseason in past years, because they play a very similar style of baseball. The difference is that the Blue Jays have some guys who can hit it over the fence in Vladdy and some of their other guys who do have some power. And they took advantage in this series of a Dodgers team that rode their starting pitching to the World Series. And then when they got there, some of those guys were a little spent. Shohei wasn't amazing pitching in the World Series. Yamamoto was, but he was kind of it. Glass had a nice relief performance in game 6 and 7, but as a starter, he was shaky, and so was Snell. And their bullpen was just not very good, which you could tell by the fact that they immediately went to their starters instead of their normal bullpen guys in game 7. They didn't even it didn't even seem like there was much thought of going to their bullpen guys. They went straight to their starters and pulled them out. The Blue Jays took advantage of that in the previous games to make it a series. But again, when you talk about repeating that and having another run like that for them, I don't know that they're going to be able to, especially if they start losing guys I'd be curious. It'll just be interesting to see how they handle free agency, what is Bichette actually looking for? You know, like what is he worth? He's a very difficult player to value right now. But it was wildly entertaining, and we've got a wildly entertaining show for all of you, because we are gonna talk some World Series. We'll maybe talk a little bit more. We'll start to briefly discuss the offseason, but the main course of today's shows is the Razzies, where we're gonna give out 5 completely made up awards to some of your favorite players, and maybe not your favorite players. We'll see. And we want to know what you think. We want to know if you've got some thoughts on who you'd like to give your awards to. If you've got some fun made up awards you want to give out to some of these guys, let us know in the comments. The easiest way to get in touch with us and to be a part of the show is to comment over on YouTube. We'd love to hear from you. Love to hear your thoughts. If you've got thoughts in the World Series, if you think that the Blue Jays are going to bounce right back and be right back here next year, if you think the Dodgers are done, whatever your thoughts are, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Definitely. And I think the only other kind of talking point now is, and we briefly mentioned it before, is like if the Dodgers win this World Series off the back of all their star power, which they did, and Miguel Rojas also made a big contribution somehow. And then they think that this is going to spur conversations about Dodgers ruining baseball and how that there is a huge imbalance amongst baseball teams in terms of not just spending power, but drawing power to like get players to come to their team. And like there is always a desire amongst players in any sport to go to the best team, right? You want to win. And right now the Dodgers are the easiest place to go win. So everyone's going to the Dodgers to form a super team and doing stuff like Shohei's doing, where they go, even if you can't afford it now, let's defer it to later to make this work. And unfortunately, other teams are unable to do that right now, whether it's through finances or through just not simply having Ohtani, Freeman, Betts, Snell, Glasnow already there. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Do you think that this World Series win for the Dodgers, the first back-to-back champions since 2000, do you think this is bad for the sport?
No, because number one, the World Series was electric. And I think a lot of people that weren't – like just if you were just on social media, I said this to when I was having lunch watching Florida get lose in dramatic fashion to Georgia yesterday, and we were talking about the World Series. And one of the things I said was that this World Series is going to draw a lot of eyes because, number one, it's been awesome. But number two, last night, there was not a lot going on in the sports world. I mean, there was some NBA action, some mediocre to terrible college football action going on. So there's a lot of eyes in the World Series. And you could tell just by being on social media, there was so much buzz around Game 7. It was an elite game. So that is good for baseball. And the other point that I would make to that is the games were played in Toronto. And the only way that happens is if Toronto has a better record than the Dodgers do, which they did. And the Dodgers and their super team had a worse record than the upstart Blue Jays. So at the end of the day, like as much as the Dodgers are a super team and they have this amazing talent, it does not we've seen this time and time again. I was trying to find it. I did like a long time ago, I did kind of a write-up on how the most spending doesn't always equal the most winning. And I can't remember where I put it, but I couldn't find it. But suffice it to say, we've seen this year after year in baseball. Just because you spent the most money does not equal you winning everything. And all their great spending could not get them a good bullpen. All their great spending did not make, you know, Freddie Freeman play well, which he did not in the World Series. They won because of guys on the fringes of their roster and because of a couple elite performances. But the Blue Jays also had a couple of elite performances and some fringe production. So I don't think it ruins the sport. I think that the reality is it's going to be on the owners and on Major League Baseball to try to correct some of the spend parity that we see right now. But at the end of the day, baseball is still very entertaining. Playoff baseball at its best is still some of the best entertainment out there. Now if you're talking about like the lockout and that sort of stuff that may be coming down the road, I don't know about that. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't predict that, to be honest, right now. But just the Dodgers in and of themselves, I don't think so. Cause they could have very easily lost. If that ball from Rojas is just, he just swings a little under that, the Blue Jays win the World Series. And so right. Like, it's a game of inches. And well, that one was pretty well over the fence, but still, like, it was a close game. The Blue Jays absolutely could have won and the narrative flips. So
I mean, it was like a game of inches with that play of the plate in the bottom, correct, of the ninth.
By literally his foot being up off, his foot is a foot more up off of home plate. Again, the Blue Jays win. And like that, it was that close, I think, is evidence that baseball is not ruined by what the Dodgers are doing. If the Dodgers blew them out in four, then you might have an argument. I might be, yeah, like, well, that was a tough watch. But they
the Blue Jays are not the Yankees. They're not pushovers like that.
They put up a huge fight, and a great credit to the Blue Jays for putting up that fight and having a great series. And it was very entertaining. And so I don't think the Dodgers are killing baseball. I do think that what the Blue Jays did was very good for baseball, because while they do spend more than, like, they are on the upper ish end of spending in Major League Baseball, they're not like the top two or three teams. So I do think it also shows you that, and again, their success is from a lot of homegrown talent and then one or two big additions that they were able to make in free agency with like Springer, like Gausman, to get them to the promised land. But Vladdy's a homegrown product. Bichette's a homegrown product. So I think and I think that shows that you can win in a lot of ways. And I hope that will be what we take away from this World Series, is that yes, the Dodgers are amazing. They built a great team, but it's clear that there are multiple ways to win.
Yeah, and baseball is like such a high level, like high variance sport, that like, and I'm being, you're gonna hate this take, but I am being dead ass. The Rockies could have put up the same fight, theoretically. In a best of seven, they might not have won it, but like the Rockies have won some, have went on a stretch where they've won 4 of 7 this year.
They have.
Right?
They have.
And And I swear there was a moment where the Rockies swept the Dodgers this year.
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm going to look that up.
Go look that up. Or at least beat the Dodgers in a series, right? Because that's what baseball is. It doesn't matter if it's in October. It doesn't make it any different from the regular season. The games are still high leverage, high variance. It's just about getting in, right?
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. So let me have a quick check. Okay, so the Dodgers are right into the Rockies in their last 10.
They did. But the Dodgers swept the Rockies multiple times.
All right, maybe the Rockies were a bad example. But what if I said, like, the A's, right? You know?
I do get your point in that because the sport is so high variance, there are a lot of teams that if you just put in a 7-game series could make something happen. Rockies are probably a bad example because I don't think they would, but I think there are more teams than people than like the average like person who doesn't follow baseball that would be surprised how well some other teams could do if they got really, really lucky. Now, again, I think when you get into the counterpoint might be, if you get into the World Series in particular, you only have 7 games, you're going to leverage your high-end talent more than you would in a regular 7-game series if it was just like a regular 3-game series during the regular season. So I don't know, but I do see what you're saying, that it is so high variance. And that's what we always say, if you just get in the dance and you've got 3 pitchers and 3 hitters, you can make it. You can make a run. Any team that gets in the dance, if they've got – like three good starters, 3 good hitters, and 1 or 2 good bullpen guys, you can make a run. Any team that gets in the dance, and it usually the team that gets to the end is the team that has that and has the best version of that. Now, like for the Dodgers, some of their starters became their bullpen guys that were able to make that happen. And the Blue Jays, again, they got some great starting pitching performances from Yu Savage and from Gausman occasionally, and also some really nice bullpen performances here and there. And then, of course, top-end talent like Vladdy having a season that is in most ranks is second only to Randy's 2020. So you can see that is a way to win as well. And so I think the question I think now becomes, as we look forward into this offseason, you know, there are lots of really well-known free agent names. There's not a lot, but there's a couple in particular, the Kyle Tuckers, the Cody Bellingers. There's a big name coming over from Japan that is going to be talked about a lot as he's a slugger. So where do those guys end up? I think as a fan of baseball, it would be really boring if the Dodgers just got those guys. I also don't necessarily know that they will, because one of the other side effects of the Dodgers building these big rosters is we always say, oh, the Dodgers are going to get the next guy. Well, they've kind of got a full roster. They've got a lot of like guys they owe money to, and that they have space that they have like assigned to these roster spots from like a positional standpoint, you know, like, so I don't know that they're going to be able to bring in all these guys, even letting them have space for them with the other guys they already have on their roster.
We can only hope. We can only dream. The Angels went 6-0 against the Dodgers this year.
So it is possible. Like I do grant you that there are more teams than you might think that could have a competitive 7-game series with the Dodgers. But
you
could put
any team in a best of 7, and like they would be in it. It's just getting to that point.
I'm not sure. I'll give you like maybe 20 teams. Maybe right. 20 okay. teams. Could if you could put in a best of 7.
I mean, the Rays beat the Dodgers in the series this year.
They did. Yeah. But again, like the Rays have, theoretically, like if we would have got, like if the Rays had gotten the postseason, we had 3 pretty good starters in Rasmussen. Oh, my word. I can't think of his name now. Rasmussen, you know, any combination of Rasmussen, Pepio, Boz, or Hauser. The guy we traded for, that is just Hauser, excuse me, that just escaped my brain. Hauser. And then from a batting standpoint, you had Aranda, who was getting back from injury, Yandy, B-Loud, Caminero. And then from the back end of the bullpen, Uceda, who turned around, Fairbanks. So, like, there was – like, we could have fit that mold of had enough guys that could have got hot and figured out a way to win a World Series.
Like, we did well against the Blue Jays this year. Apart from right at the end of the year. We played well against the Mariners. We swept the Mariners this year. We, like, it's just like the playoffs are not real. I hate when people try and like take lessons. What have we learned from this postseason? Nothing.
Baseball's fun. That's what we learned.
Baseball's fun to watch. Miguel Rojas will hit the game-winning home run in the World Series because baseball is not real.
And because it's small, it is a large sample size sport that gets distilled down to a way too small sample size every single year. And it's really entertaining.
Yeah. Are we supposed to learn something from Miguel Rojas tying the game late? Is that supposed to teach us a lesson about baseball? Is that supposed to teach us that Jose Caballero needs to be on your team because he's going to hit the game-tying home run next year?
I don't know. But if you think it does have something to teach us, you could let us know down in the comments over on YouTube. We thank all of you for joining us to talk a little bit of baseball, talk a little World Series. We're going to talk some crazy awards here in just a second. We appreciate all of you here. If it's your first time joining us, thank you. We really appreciate you. If you've seen us before, if you've seen our faces before, you enjoy what we're talking about, do us a massive favor and subscribe, follow, share us out. It's free. Doesn't sign you up for anything other than knowing when we're going live and being able to be a part of the conversation helps us out so much. If you enjoy the show, would mean the world to us. And we're going to go into something that I think does mean the world to us. And that is the Razzies, where we give out made up awards to our favorite and sometimes our least favorite players on this team. That is our favorite. And I think we've got some great ones for you guys this year. And I'm going to pass it off to you, Pat, to give out your first award.
Oh, how kind of you. In case this is your first time here, most of these awards are basically strange superlatives that we give out. And I try to put them in like some kind of chronological order that could kind of spell the story of the season. And I am going to start with someone that was very influential at the start of the season, particularly influential in the first game of the season. That award is the Best Josh Lowe Impersonator Award. And that is going to one Cameron with a K, Cameron Meisner. Cameron Meisner, congratulations for your Best Josh Lowe Impersonation Award, because Josh Lowe started the season injured. He was unable to play. And so we had Cameron Meisner come up in his place instead. And Cameron Meisner is the same height as Josh Lowe. They are both 6'4". They both weigh 220 pounds, which is very bizarre.
That's very bizarre.
They both bat lefty and play outfield. And then what's even crazier is if you look at their Baseball Savant page, their graphs are exactly the same this year, essentially. Meisner is a better fielder than Josh Lowe, I would say. He's able to play center field.
Yes.
Probably want him there. But otherwise, batting profile-wise, they can run into one, but they've both got very long swings, struggle with velocity, have average walk rates, lots of swing and miss, decent bat speeds. They're the same player. I would say Josh Lowe's a slightly better hitter, and Cameron Meisner's a slightly better fielder.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they do the exact same thing. Like, they have the exact same profile. So when we were missing Josh Lowe in the first 6 weeks of the season, Cameron Meisner stepped right in, and it was like we never missed him, where he went on a big hot streak and then looked absolutely atrocious. It was the full Josh Lowe experience.
And we said it a bunch when it was happening. I remember us talking about this a lot during the beginning of the season because it is like almost scary how much they fit the same profile. I will say I do think that Meisner is more than a little better defensively than Josh Lowe. I think he is a full like notch better than Josh Lowe. Yeah. And I will say Josh Lowe is his potential as a hitter is higher. But recently they've been the exact same profile. So again, like what I think one of the themes of our awards that you'll come to realize is that a lot of players played really meaningful or put really meaningful contributions into this season that we did not expect going in. And Meisner was one of them. And he was called upon in a time when he wasn't expected and did, frankly, as well as anyone could have expected him to do. And he's got to be happy with how he performed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he lost his major league place in what was already quite a bad outfield by the end of the year. So he's definitely got to like show some improvement, especially as a hitter, to kind of regain an outfield spot. But he'll be back in the mix in spring training for sure. You'll get a chance.
And I think if he went to another organization, we say this about a lot of guys on this team. I think there are organizations he could start for, or organizations he would be a fourth outfielder for. That he's a toolsy outfielder. He's not like as fast as some other guys on the team, but he can steal a bag here and there. And so I think he's a toolsy outfielder. You could stick him out there anywhere in the outfield. He can run into one. I think he could start or at least be a fourth outfielder for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and he's less injury prone than Josh Lowe as well. He's able to stay on the field better. So there's definitely a chance that he could wangle his way into being a decent outfielder. Mm-hmm. And maybe that will be next year after he's made some adjustments. Maybe. I mean, Josh Lowe had a similar career path where he came up to the big leagues, really struggled, had to go back down for a while. But then the next year, he had that big breakout year. Maybe if Cameron Meisner is the Josh Lowe regen we all think he is, maybe he'll do that.
That would be lovely because we really need someone to step up in the outfield, as we will discuss all offseason.
Yeah, and probably more during this awards show, actually. Okay, so that's the first award. Well done, Cameron Meisner. Zach, would you like to present your first award?
I would, and in keeping with our conversation about the outfield, and our conversation about early season contributions, I'd like to give my award to another guy who contributed very early in the season, but one who also continued to contribute throughout the entire year. It is the he played how many games award, and that goes to Jake Mangum, who played the fourth most games on the team.
Can I guess how many games he played? Because I don't know.
You can guess. Go for it.
So he wasn't up the whole year. I can't remember once he got called up if he got sent back down again at any point. I'm going to guess he played like 125 games.
You are very close. 118 games. 428 plate appearances this season for the Rays, which was significantly higher than his preseason expected numbers, which I could not find, which is a bummer. I was trying to find them before this show. I couldn't find the preseason expected numbers anywhere. And one of the reasons why I wanted to give him this award as well is because, yes, he did. He played a bunch of games because of the injuries and because of some underperformance of guys like Morel. But I want to give him his flowers a little bit because he was not like, you know, while he isn't the answer necessarily in the outfield, he was more than serviceable. He ended the season with a 95 WRC plus, which for a speedy glove first, ostensibly outfielder that that he sometimes profiles as is good. But he obviously had a very high batting average for a lot of the season. He finishes the year with 1.8 F4, which is good for fourth on the team. He finished with the second most stolen bases on the team at 27, which is also good for 12th among MLB outfielders. And he also finished with a 1.5 defense stat on according to Fangraphs, which would rank him fifth on the team. We had some good defenders. And also 22nd for MLB outfielders. So he's a top 30. There's only 30 teams. He's a top 30 outfielder in Major League Baseball from a defensive perspective. And I think that, you know, that deserves some notice. As a guy who also was not expected to play as big of a role as he has this last season. And when he got the opportunity, he made the most of it. He is very clearly a guy, in my opinion, who deserves a roster spot as a fourth outfielder, because he has shown the ability to get the bat on the baseball, to play pretty good defense, and to be able to steal bases and get on base enough to get stolen bases. That matters. We had guys like Jose Siri, who, as fast as that guy was, could only steal like 20 bags because the dude could not get on base. Like just couldn't figure it out. And so there is something to be said for that. He's a very low maintenance guy. And a guy that I as much as we're gonna, you know, talk negatively about the outfield, which we unfortunately we will, because they just had, you know, he contributed to the complete power outage of the outfield in 2025. But he's not there for power. He's there to hit the ball, put it in play, steal bases. And he did exactly what he set out to do, pretty much. And to the tune of 118 games, which is way more than he was supposed to play. But much like we always, you know, laud the Rays organization for, their guys are ready. When it's time for them to step up, they are ready. They know how to play the game. They've got the fundamentals down. And they do an admirable job in those opportunities. And that's what Jake Mangum did. He played how many games? Award recipient for 2025.
Yeah, I think Jake Mangum was a mild fan favorite.
I would say
like
so.
He wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't Junior Caminero, but you know, when his walk-up music came on, he's like, "I need your love tonight." the crowd got into that, right?
And he has a built-in fan base, by the way, from his college days in Mississippi State. He's considered the mayor of Starkville, which was talked about a lot during the season. And those fans are rabid, and there's a lot of them who still support him. So shout out to all the Mississippi State fans supporting Jake Mangum.
And isn't he the all-time hits leader over there as well?
He is.
Yeah, so I think even on a really good Rays team, he could, like you said, be a fourth outfielder. Yes. He's like the perfect fourth outfielder. He switch hits. He'll put the ball in play. He can pinch run. He can be a pinch defender. Yeah, I hope he's on the team next year. But I hope that he doesn't play 118 games. I hope he plays fewer than that.
And I think that's fair to say. He is not as bad offensively as Taylor Walls is, but he is in the same boat of love you, buddy. I want to see less of you because I want somebody who can hit the ball over the fence to be sitting out there.
That is damning with faint praise, saying he's not as bad as Taylor Walls.
He is not as bad as Taylor Walls. He's not as bad. No, very few people are as bad as Taylor Walls. No offense to Taylor Walls. He's an elite
Gold Glove nominee.
He's an elite defender. And obviously Mangum is not as good as a defender as Taylor Walls. So
yeah, so there you go. They're probably like a similar
it's my nice value. Thing I have to say about Taylor Walls for the
I am surprised, actually, and I'm going to spoil this now. We don't have a Taylor Walls Award.
We do not.
This year.
We do not have a Taylor
Which,
Walls
like,
Award.
I feel like he's become a bit of a punching bag. But we don't have a Taylor Walls one. We're not taking the low-hanging fruit here at the RBLR Rays show. But speaking of low-hanging fruit, I'm going to continue to punch the outfield. This is the last one, I promise.
Okay, here we go.
So this is a sequel to last year's award that I gave out, which was how bad can your infield get? Which shows how far we've come. Our infield was really good this year, for the most part. Where I gave Nico Goodrum an award for essentially illustrating how bad the shortstop position got last year. Because we had Wander Franco out, we had Taylor Walls out with injury, and we also, like, people that were also in the mix got injured, like Yu Chen, right? Mm-hmm. So Nico Goodrum was the starting shortstop for a little bit. This one is a sequel to that of how bad can your outfield get award. And this is a joint award towards three Rays players that were all real outfielders on the Rays this season. And they're names that you may have forgotten existed on the Rays. Okay. So I'm going to line him up here. In left field, this is the guy that had the most appearances out of the three. In left field, we had Travis Jankowski, who actually wasn't that bad.
Actually was pretty good.
Yeah, but like, did we want Travis Jankowski starting major league games for us this year? No. In center field, I'm putting Stuart Fairchild. Yeah, Stuart Fairchild. Did he make a single major league plate appearance for us?
No.
But, you know, that's fine.
It's okay.
He did his best, okay? He came here immediately injured and never played. Yeah. And then in right field, I'm putting Tristan Peters.
We love Tristan Peters.
Who also came over and played four games for the Rays outfield. He went 0 for 12. Striking out 7 of those 12 times. Putting up a minus 100 WRC plus and a negative 0.4 FWAR, which was the second lowest of any Rays player this year. And he did that in just 12 games.
Outstanding.
So, yeah. So well done, Tristan Peters. Those four games were truly summoning.
Yeah. We will never see 12. His like again.
0 for 12 with 7 strikeouts. I mean, like, that was, like, even Alex Jackson wasn't that bad.
Yeah. But, I mean, hey, he came up from Durham and he did his best.
He did his best. Although he might argue that wasn't his best.
He probably would argue that's not his best. It's tough. I mean, those late season call-ups, they can be tough on, you know. And so I give him credit for you know, it's just tough. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Major league pitching is hard to hit. And
yeah.
You know, it just is.
It is. It is. And I wouldn't be able to do it. But yeah, there were three guys that played for our outfield this year. I mean, technically Stuart Fairchild never entered a game because he was injured. Yeah. But these are all guys that were, I mean, he's been on the roster the whole time. He's been on the roster longer than any of the other guys. So yeah, it was a grim time in the outfield. I mean, Everson Pereira was considered a better option than any of those guys. That's where we were at.
He has potential. Pereira does.
Yeah, he put up negative 0.5 FWAR though.
He did do that. Oh man. Yeah.
Right, let's stop talking about the outfield. Get us out of here, Zach.
I will get us out of here, and I'm going to give us our first pitching award, and it is a positive award that I'm going to give out here, and a true positive, and not just like a, you know, making lemons out of lemonade or making lemonade out of lemon situation. And that is the yes award, and that goes to Edwin Uceda, who had a Jekyll and Hyde season that started with maybe one of the worst, you know, 35 games, you know, 35 innings stretches to begin the season for the first 3 months from the beginning of the season until June, where I think pretty much everybody thought that he was cooked and he was done and he had regressed and he was going to, you know, find his way out of the league. And those, you know, first 3 months of the season, like I said, he pitched 35 and a third innings, second most on the team out of the bullpen, to the tune of a 5.24 ERA, over 6 xERA, over 5 FIP, over 4 xFIP, negative 0.4 F4, good for worst on the team in that span, was only striking guys out 27% of the time, which is way down for him, walking guys 10% of the time, just genuinely a bad time the entire way. And I think all, like I said, I think that the consensus was he is washed. Whatever good things he had last season, he lost it and we're going to have to replace him. But then the calendar flipped over to July. And in July, August, and September, he was a completely different guy from a results perspective. in that period of time, he pitched 40 and two-thirds innings, which was the most of any reliever in that period. He pitched to a 2.66 ERA, 2.15 expected ERA, 2.27 FIP, 2.72 expected FIP, 1.3 F WAR, the best in the bullpen in that time period, striking guys out 36% of the time, only walking them 7% of the time to finish out the season, ending him with 76 innings pitched, the most by 15 innings on the team.
That's impressive.
So he was a workhorse all season. He turned it around mid-season and became right back to his elite self. And when you start to wonder, okay, why did this happen? What was the turnaround? The reality is he didn't change that much. And one of the things that I look at is, you know, how much is he throwing the ball in the strike zone? Is he throwing strikes? He threw the ball in the strike zone 42.4% of the time in the first half of the year. In the back half of the year, he threw the ball in the strike zone 42.5% of the time.
Right. Okay.
The exact same. But, however, when you look at his contact rates, he was getting contacted about 10% more outside the strike zone in the first half of the year relative to the second half of the year. What does that mean? His stuff was not as nasty. It was not breaking, and he was not locating it where he wanted to. It was in and around the zone, and it was not that, like, those breaking pitches were getting crushed. The ones that are just kind of falling out of the zone or falling, you know, not to a good place, they weren't getting all the way down. They were just kind of like tailing and just sitting right on the outside of the strike zone, but they were still in very hittable locations. They were getting crushed, and that's what was happening. In the second half of the season, stuff was a little sharper. He found a way to find his release point and get that stuff a little bit sharper, and the contact rates outside and inside the strike zone went down again, which allowed him to then get those good results because he was missing more bats in the second half of the season. And the question I think we have now going forward for him is, which version are we going to get going into 2026? And I wish I could tell you. I wish I could because it doesn't – there was not a humongous difference in any of his underlying stats other than he just started missing more bats outside the strike zone and inside the strike zone in the back half of the season. And so it's hard for me to tell you if he'll make a huge improvement, if he will continue his huge improvement from the second half of the season into 2026. But there's a very real possibility that he's the closer going forward, which we'll talk about more as we go through this offseason. The Rays have a very interesting decision to make about Pete Fairbanks. And so there's a lot to discuss there. And he and Clevinger are two of the guys that you'd look at to potentially be the closer, especially if they're going to try to make Jax a starter. And I, for one, can see a world where I'm not just completely panicking if that happens, because I think it says something about him as a player that he was able to pull it out and he was able to turn it around. Not everybody could do that. So it's the no, yes, yes, yes award to Edwin Uceda for finding a way to turn it around midseason in dramatic fashion.
Yeah, comeback player of the season when the comeback was midseason.
Like, midseason. Comeback, yeah, in season.
Best in-season comeback, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, relievers are a volatile business anyway, because one bad outing can completely destroy your season numbers, right? Because of the smaller samples. So it is volatile. I mean, I looked last year where we gave Uceda the Bullpen Factory Product of the Year Award. Mm-hmm. And we tried to predict who would win that in 2025. And like, this shows how unpredictable relievers are. Our predictions were Mason Montgomery, Hunter Biggie, and Garrett Acton.
Garrett Acton.
Who never pitched for the team. So
I think he pitched a couple games, like one or two, but nowhere near as much as we were expecting.
Yeah. And of course, Montgomery really underwhelmed, and Biggie got hurt and was kind of in and out of the team. So, like,
why did we not say Elrod Emrod should have been easy. Why did we not say Emrod?
Why did we not say Emrod?
Because he was elite until he got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Is that who you'd predict for next year? I guess, does he count anymore?
I don't think he'll be. I mean, I don't know that he's going to be back next year.
Yeah.
Not until the very end of the season. But he, I mean, when he's back, like if we were going to, if he was healthy, he would be my pick to be the closer if Pete gets let go.
Yeah.
Or traded or whatever.
All right. You mentioned it. So I'm only going to briefly mention this award, which was most like the Rays. Let's do the most likely to be a good starting pitcher next year award, which is the kind of the Rays, like the Rays are always looking for something that they can like gain value from. And their latest trend is being very good at turning mid relievers into really good starters.
Yeah.
They did it with Rasmussen. They did it with Jeffrey Springs.
Mm-hmm. Littell.
Littell. So who's next? You could make a case for Joe Boyle. Mm-hmm. But he was already kind of starting games quite a lot before he came over them. I'm going to go with Griffin Jacks, like you said. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot of potential. The Rays paid you could argue about Taj Bradley's value, but that was a real name that they gave up to get him. And he could still be a reliever, but I think he's got the repertoire and stuff to be a good starter. And yeah, I mean, I would love them to do that, but watch them do it with like someone completely random instead. Like watch Jesse Schultens get turned into a starter or something like that. And he's really good.
Yeah.
Because maybe Griffin Jacks is too good to go in the Rays starter machine. Because
Because
so I don't know how if you play EAFC or FIFA or anything like that, there's a thing you can do with your players in Ultimate Team where you can evolve them. But most so you put them in a machine and you do a couple of objectives with them, and then they get upgraded massively and maybe get a new position and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But usually to counterbalance that, to make sure you don't create complete monsters, they're like, hey, the player you put in has to have a starting rating of like a maximum of this. And I feel like the Rays starting pitcher machine for the Rays, you're like, you can't be above a certain overall.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Griffin Jacks is already above the overall threshold.
Yeah, and I think especially if they do move on from Pete, which I'm not saying that they will, by the way. I'm just saying it's possible because I did some – this is a longer conversation. I was looking in at some of, you know, what he's set to earn relative to other bullpen arms. It's a conversation that needs to be had for sure. If they do that, then I do think you'd want him in the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So we'll have a see.
But we'll see. A lot can still happen. And my next award is kind of a sister award to that award. And that is the, hey, is this guy legit award? And that goes to Ian Seymour, a guy who we had talked about extensively in previous years as a guy to watch, who like we liked his stuff. We weren't really sure how it would play at the MLB level. He's a pitchability guy, doesn't have like insane velocity or stuff, but he's just a guy who knows how to work through a baseball game and does have some good stuff. He's got some good location. And he came out this season, you know, when we were moving on from guys like Littell and trying to find some starts when Shane McClanahan could not make it back and when guys like Taj didn't work out and Joe Boyle didn't work out. Ian Seymour came up and was very respectable in my eyes in his performance. He ended up with a 3.63 ERA, a 3.19 FIP, and a 1.1 F4 on the season over 57 innings pitched. And he did some in the bullpen and some starting, ended up starting five games for the Rays. And I got to say, I was really impressed with him as a kind of a bulk guy in the back end of the bullpen and also a starter. He just kind of was impressive all season long. You know, he's never going to be the guy who strikes out a bunch of guys, but he does have the ability to keep the walks low, which is kind of what he did, only striking out guys like 26, 27% of the time, but not walking guys any over 8% of the time. So he's keeping guys off the base paths the best that he can, and just finding ways to get through games. Maybe a kind of a left-handed reminder of Ryan Yarbrough. It's kind of who he reminds me of. So could he have a season like Yarbrough had it? I can't remember what season. Was that 2018 where he won like 26 games or something insane?
Yeah.
He just had a bunch of wins.
Yeah, did really well.
Yeah.
And you know what? That strikeout percentage, that 26%, that puts him in 78th percentile.
Yeah.
So that's like not bad. That's not good.
Not at all.
And he avoids hard contact in his time.
That's the name of his game. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing you got to worry about with him is his ground ball percentage is bad.
It's a little low. You'd like that.
He's a fly ball pitcher, which you can get away with. Like,
you can get away with it.
Yeah. And if you've got a good defensive outfield,
which the Rays do.
Yeah. So, I think he's in the rotation. I think he's got a rotation spot at the start next year.
I think he has to, especially with Shane being so uncertain as to what his future looks like. I think he's locked in. And especially with we really don't have any clarity on if they're going to retain Hauser or not. I've got him in pencil as a rotation spot for next year.
Yeah, for sure. Good for you, Ian Seymour. You overtook Joe Rock. Because he was the guy that we always mentioned him with.
He was. But he performed much better than Joe Rock did when Joe Rock got his opportunities.
Yeah. Joe Rock has a better name, but Ian Seymour has better pitching, which is more
important. Which is what we do decide the spots on at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, if we made maybe this is an off-season segment where all we just like do team. The all names team. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great episode. We've had some elite names in the history of the Rays. I think we're gonna save that in the drafts folder and come back to that.
Yeah, like come on, Rocco Baldelli.
Incredible.
Now relieved Twins manager Rocco Baldelli. Okay. My next award. Oh, it's your next award because
I just did an award. It's your award.
Yeah, it's my award. My next award is, I'm calling it the Unction Award. Shout out to the best unk in the team, okay. as the kids today like to say. I get called an unk, and I'm 28 years old.
That's
awesome. So, the real unk. Is someone that is, yeah, I'm washed, according to my own producer. he just messaged me in the chat. But I'm going to talk about someone who's even older than me, the unk in the conversation, the washed unk. I'm going to talk about someone who's 34. It's a miracle he still walks. It's a miracle he can still walk. And he's a guy who is known for his walks, with Yandy Diaz. 34 years old. Been around the team for quite some time now. This is actually his seventh season with the team, if you can believe that.
That's pretty cool.
And he is still absolutely fantastic. He got off to a bit of a slow start, but then absolutely kicked on and had a really good season. A 135 WRC plus, a 300 batting average, 366 on base. Hit 25 home runs, which is a career high for him. Mm-hmm. Like every year you think you're going to start seeing a Yandy Diaz decline and he teases you with one. And then he just goes out and shoves once again. Yeah. So, and I think a huge thing that Yandy contributed to, and this is partly because he DH'd a lot of the year. He played 150 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is huge. He actually had a vesting option on his contract, which was dependent on him making 500 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, I lied. That's for next year. Is the vesting option on his contract. Mm-hmm. But I think he's proven that he's still valuable. And that now the rule moved to DH, that he doesn't have to run as much and stretch as much. He is not only good, but he's going to play most games for you and give you a quality major league at bat. And he is probably the second best hitter, if not the best hitter on this team, and has been for the past like 4 years now. So I just wanted to throw him some flowers. I hope this is not, once again, we're probably going to have the rumors swirling around him and Brandon Lau. We're going to have to do that again. And if this was his last season with the team, what a year it was. And oh my goodness, what a masterstroke it was trading Jake Bowers for him.
Absolutely insane trade.
Because at the time, we were all like, what?
Jake Bowers?
Not Jake Bowers for this bum Yandy Diaz.
I remember.
And now look at it. What a move.
What a move. I'd actually like to give, I guess we're just giving out sister awards, because I've got another award that is of the same ilk as the Unk Award, the Unction Award, excuse me. And that is the Still Got It Award. That goes to Brandon Lau. It's not an award show without Zach giving an award to Brandon Lau, as we all know. And did what I think, I'll be honest, I did not know that he was capable of, which is playing 134 games in a season and hitting 30 bombs. I wanted to believe, I needed to believe for my own sanity, and he did it. He went out there, he hit 30 bombs, 83 RBIs, 114 WRC plus, 1.7 F4, was quite bad defensively, unfortunately, and was sure did not walk at all season. But he did hit a bunch of home runs, which was very fun for me, and I hope for other Rays fans too. But he's a guy that every year, everybody is the year that people think he's done. Even more so than, like, I think Yandy, because he's been such a consistently good hitter where he doesn't rely on his power and hasn't had as much of an injury history. Pam's a big fan of Brent Lau as well. I think we know this. We all know this. There hasn't been as much conversation about when is Yandy going to fall off. Brandon has obviously had way more injuries. But Brandon just refuses to fall off. He refuses to just, you know, throw in the towel. And I can't help but just, you know, love him for it. Love that he still goes out there and gives you those home runs every season. And I hope he can continue to do it because the guy's still got it.
Yeah. Do you think he can continue that into next season?
I have no idea, to be totally honest with you. His numbers are not that dramatically different from last season. One thing that we definitely noticed with him is the walks are just almost completely going out of his game overall.
Yeah.
I mean, he never walked a lot. He always was around 10%. Now he's getting closer to 7%. So I don't know. I think that right now, until Braden Taylor is ready, we don't have a like amazing option at second base. Palacios could be an option. But I do think he will at least get the opportunity to for the first half of the season. But we'll see. I'm not gonna say I don't believe in him until such time as he proves that he can't do it.
Yeah. Part of me has the narrative in my head that if Brandon Lau was a Yankee, he'd be like he'd have his number retired.
Oh, maybe. Brandon Lau is, I think he's one of the most divisive Rays maybe ever. And I think, you know, we're going to have, you know, when he does finally leave the team, whether he plays forever for the Rays and retires a Ray, or he moves on to another organization, his legacy as a Ray is one who played through a lot of the success of the team. And he was a huge part of the team's success when we were being successful, and he still produced even when the team was struggling. And so I think when we look back on his legacy, there will be, you know, we will still remember all of the conversation about how bad he looks when he was bad. But when you look at, when you get to the end of his, of those seasons, and you just look at his, you know, Fangraphs page or his Baseball Reference page, and you look at the numbers he put up, despite the injury, despite the strikeouts, I think he's going to be remembered very favorably at the end of his career.
I mean, a career 123 WRC plus as a second baseman is, you know, outrageously strong. What a guy. We love Brandon Lau. I hope he sticks around. I think he will stick around.
I do too.
Yandy, I'm less sure of, just because of how good a rounder is.
We'll see.
Okay, my last award of this year's Razzies is a Halloween-based pun that I thought up, and that is the Frankenstein's monster for my favorite hitter at Steinbrenner Field.
Nice.
And that goes to Johnny Aranda. I mean, Junior Caminero was also incredible at notably incredible at Steinbrenner Field. But don't worry, we'll be talking about Junior Caminero in a bit. Jonathan Aranda was also incredible. He led the entire team in WRC Plus this year, 146 WRC Plus. And what's crazy was that at home, he only hit 4 home runs. He wasn't taking advantage of the Stein's short pots, but was still just slapping the ball all over the field, getting extra base hits, getting on base. He's just been a monster all year. He was a popular breakout pick amongst baseball experts this year, and he proved them all right. And we've now got a cornerstone first baseman to match our cornerstone third baseman. Which is really, really nice to know that you've got a couple of guys that are just like locks there in those positions and should be locks for years to come. So Johnny Aranda, we love you. Congratulations. You are Frankenstein's monster.
It's just been so fun to be proven right after all the things that we said about if he can just figure out how to play a position and get to the major leagues, he's going to be so good, guys. We promise. And he was.
Yeah, and in the end, I think he started the season grading pretty favorably as a defender at first base. He ended up still finishing the year with one out above average.
We'll take it.
So that's like technically above average.
I would agree that he was fine. He wasn't like but again, it's first base. He wasn't like amazing, but he made some nice scoops. I have several memories of like him making good scoops, making headsy plays at first base. He seemed fine.
He's better than Yandy would have been out there. And he's probably like, I think about this often. You know G-Man Choi?
I do know G-Man Choi.
Was he a good fielder? Because the eye test told me yes, but most of the like numbers said no.
I think first base is one of those positions where it's sort of hard to grade because it's really a lot on, you know, on scoops, on being in the right position. Like range stats don't really make sense with first base. It's not really what the position's about. And G-Man Choi was not fast. So I'm sure that didn't help his numbers from a defensive standpoint. G-Man Choi was many things. Fast was not one of them.
But he could do the splits.
He could do the splits. And he could hit home runs off of Gerrit Cole, which is why we loved him.
Yeah, right. G-Man Choi will forever be like the ultimate like cult hero. But yeah, Johnny Aranda, way better hit than G-Man Choi.
G-Man Choi was so fun. I could talk about G-Man Choi forever. I love G-Man Choi.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just a great guy. One of the best hitters coming out of our farm system in a while.
Yeah. And for our last award, I'm going to give it to who I think you all probably expect. It's the franchise award, Junior Caminero, because he is the franchise. And he is.
I thought you were going to give it to Nick Fortes.
Or Chandler Simpson, maybe.
Who
I'm sad I couldn't. I didn't get him an award. He was great, but not as good as Junior Caminero, who hit a whole bunch of home runs, came just a couple shy of taking the franchise record in home runs at age 21 season. Although he did turn 22 a little past the middle point of this season, ended up at a 129 WRC plus. We've all talked about the things he still has to work on from an offensive standpoint. We've all talked about, obviously, he's got some defensive things. You know, we'd like him to see some improvement there. But the reality is the dude was a 4.6 F4 player at 21 years old, hitting 45 bombs. He's the franchise. He's the future. We got a rare mulligan on a franchise, you know, middle infielder, or he's a corner infielder, but he
left-sided infielder,
left side of the infield, a mulligan there. And I'm so grateful for him, because I don't know where the franchise would be without him, to be honest, right now. Because he is the franchise. He is the future of this team. And so excited to see what he does next year. And he was the best part of watching this season, especially as season wound down. He was the best part of watching this team.
100%. He is the franchise. He is everything. And we did a whole show about Junior Caminero.
We did.
Last week. Or 2 weeks ago.
Week before.
2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. We did a whole show on Junior Caminero. So you should, if you want to hear us gush for an hour about Junior Caminero, which I believe believe me is as entertaining as it sounds, yes. You should go check out 2 week episodes ago. And to make sure that you don't miss an episode like that, you need to make sure you like and subscribe.
You do. You do. And we're going to be here all off season with you guys. Talking Rays baseball. We've got player reviews to do. We've got some special shows to do all off season long. We hope you enjoyed the Raysies. We hope you enjoyed the World Series. And we hope that this off season is going to be a fun one. We're going to get into some more player reviews next week. We're also going to be talking about free agency, as it technically is started today and throughout this week. It will be technically starting, but we probably won't see much until the weekend. So there's a chance we might see some moves made before then. If you think there are going to be some moves, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear from you on that. But stick around, because we're going to be talking about what we think the Rays are going to do, what we'd like to see them do, our pie in the sky. I think like this would be amazing if they did this, but also some realistic thoughts on what they might do. What decisions are they going to make on Pete Fairbanks and Brandon Lau, who have options? What are they going to do there? Are there any other guys they're going to consider bringing back, like Hauser? We've got all kinds of questions to answer going into free agency, and we're going to answer them right here on the RBLR Rays Show. And we hope we see you back next week.
Yeah, definitely. And if there's an award that we should have given and you would like to make up, you need to let us know in the comments too, or on the socials.
Yes. The best place to talk to us is on YouTube. Leave a comment there. And if you want to know when we go live next to talk about all that stuff and when you can get involved in the show, do us a huge favor and drop us a subscribe or a follow on any of the platforms. It helps us out so much. And it just allows us to bring you our thoughts on the race a little bit easier. And we look forward to doing that all off season long.
Definitely. It's going to be an interesting off season, our first under the new ownership. We've got a lot of roster crunch to do.
We do.
So who's going to stay, who's going to go? And we've got lots of clear areas to improve. So how are we going to do that? Let's find out.
Let's find out. And however it happens, whatever ends up happening through this Rays off season, we're going to be here talking about it. We hope you guys will be here too. And you know, there's a lot of questions and they're going to be answered one way or the other. And no matter how they're answered, it's going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.